Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, and we are here to talk about the first game of the NFL season. A pretty boring contest, I would say. Nothing much really happened. Oh no, it was actually a fascinating game. And the Patriots are not going to go 16-0 this year. That is a scoop on this show from me to you. Joining me to discuss this, friend of the show, CBS's Will Brinson. Will, what's up?
What's up, Bill? How you doing? I think you just tweeted happy birthday to Mina Kimes, who is one of my favorite guests on this show. And so that is a huge honor to me that I get to review the first game of the season. You could have gone forced Mina in here on her birthday. But I am honored.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Mina did do the live podcast I did with Robert Mays on my old show on her 30th birthday. Certainly on her birthday, which was a little much for her, I felt like.
Did she see, like, I would make the mistake of imbibing too many adult beverages on my 30th birthday for a live podcast. It would go poorly.
Yeah. No, she was great. She was wonderful. Josh Gondelman was great. I think the problem was me. I think I was the issue with the live show. I think everyone else was very solid. And I wasn't drunk at all. So that should say something about my abilities when it comes to live broadcasting. But yes, of course, happy birthday, Mina. I'm sure she'll be back on later on this year. But we have a really fascinating game to get to. I certainly didn't see this coming. And I even went on SportsCenter yesterday or Wednesday. And I said, hey, listen, if you're going to build a team that could beat the Patriots, it would be the Chiefs, a team that's going to have a good pass rush, a team that's going to have, you know, going to stay on the field on offense. They're not going to make a lot of big plays, but they're going to make a lot of steady plays, keep the Patriots offense off the field. The Chiefs won this game, but that was not how they won this game. It was almost entirely the opposite until the very end of the contest.
Yeah. I mean, Bill, I really think that there are just any number of fascinating layers from this game for both teams. I would start with, because I think that the Patriots are just inherently the bigger story, because New England was supposed to go 19-0 or already went 16-0. And then they lose Julian Edelman in the preseason. And I thought that what you really saw from that game was, I think people are going to say that Tom Brady looked like he's old. I don't think that's the case. I think Tom Brady looked like a guy who was adjusting to life without his safety valve in Julian Edelman, a guy who has been on the same page with him for a long time. You know, I think averaged, 130 targets over the past 4 years. Mm-hmm. Brady attempted 49 deep passes of 20 yards or more per Pro Football Focus in 2016. Now, that's 12 games, obviously. So four per average per game, 11.3% of his attempts over 20 yards, just 16th in the league. It felt like he was throwing downfield all game long, Bill, and I think that's partially because Edelman wasn't there to soak up the stuff underneath, but also because without Edelman, the Chiefs were able to drop all those guys in coverage and just play seven or eight guys deep and force Brady to take some shots. And the Patriots, which, unlike something that they don't ever do this, they didn't seem to adjust or know how to adjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely really fair. I think it was a very fascinating change to some extent in that offense. And part of it was, I think, you know, the Patriots had a pretty clear plan. They wanted to stay away from Marcus Peters, who I think didn't allow a catch all game, if I'm not mistaken. I think he spent most of his time on Chris Hogan. And they were going to avoid Eric Berry, who spent the entire game pretty much on Rob Gronkowski. And we'll get to Eric Berry and the unfortunate injury he suffered a little later. But it seemed like they sort of wanted to go after Philip Gaines. They wanted to go after Terrence Mitchell. They wanted to go after the secondary targets in the Chiefs secondary. And that worked to some extent, but it did seem like they were throwing different kinds of passes relative to what they normally do. And that's surprising to me, because you would think that given how effective they've been with the scheme they've had over the past 3 years, that that would be kind of the basis of what they do. And they have so many players who can play so many different roles in that offense. You know, just because you have Brandon Cooks doesn't mean you have to chuck it 20 yards downfield. You can try and throw intermediate routes to him. And it's surprising that even though the Chiefs were, like you said, dropping back eight guys at times for chunks of the game, that they weren't, you know, trying to fit those passes into small windows in the intermediate range, because that's what Tom Brady does pretty much better than anybody else in football.
Yeah, and it was what was really strange about it was the opening drive was exactly what we expected the Patriots to be. You know, James White is lining out wide. Mm-hmm. They're subbing in running backs. They're using these different packages. They're putting, I mean, like, you know, you don't know. The whole point is that this offense is supposed to be malleable between all of these different pieces, and you didn't know where guys were going. And when they picked up the tempo, it looked like the Chiefs had no answer. And then Kareem Hunt gives them the ball, the Patriots, the ball right back. And it was, I mean, at that point, it felt like curtains. I mean, like, this game is going to be a blowout. The Patriots are going to roll. They're going to have an unstoppable offense. And it just didn't happen. And it's weird because the Patriots are not the team that fails to adjust. They are not the team that goes away from their game plan. And it felt like they really did. I do think Brady's stats could have been better. You know, he should have had a long touchdown pass to Brandon Cooks that was, you know, DPI that ended up being, I'm assuming, a Mike Gillisley touchdown run. Because he had all of them, I think.
Yes.
I have zero shares of him in fantasy. That's delightful. And then there was the 20-yard touchdown pass early to Gronk that could have been a score, but obviously wasn't a catch. So I think Brady's stats could have looked better. And I think there's a little bit of game flow that's going to ding him there because Gillisley ended up, they fed Gillisley inside the five. You know, they weren't throwing these short passes. But certainly the Patriots just looked out of sync after a really impressive first drive.
Yeah, and I think what was surprising to me, maybe not surprising, because it's unfair to say from the Chiefs' perspective, but maybe a really promising thing for the Chiefs is that the pass rush by the end of the game looked pretty good. And I wonder if maybe it was a thing where they thought about that Falcons game. They thought about how the Falcons played 92 snaps on defense or 93 snaps or however many it was, over 90 snaps on defense, and how by the end of the game they were just gassed. Their pass rushers could not get into anything. And I wonder if this was a thing where they were hoping, okay, we're going to keep it close. We're going to try and, you know, try and rush three guys and keep, you know, and keep Justin Houston off the line of scrimmage and have him drop back into coverage here or there, you know, and keep our guys fresh. And then in the fourth quarter, that's when we're going to start sending blitzes. That's when we're going to start sending guys after Brady. Because in the fourth quarter, it worked. I mean, Justin Houston, I think maybe in the second half as opposed to the fourth quarter, but I think in the third quarter and then again in the fourth quarter, Justin Houston had two sacks past Marcus Cannon, who was one of the best right tackles in football last year. And if he's going, if he's the guy he's been in years past when he's been healthy, if that pass rush is really functional, I mean, that's really impressive given how bad their pass rush has been for stretches over the last couple of years.
Yeah, if Justin Houston is a 15 to 20 sack, I mean, that's, you know, asking a lot, but I mean, that's who he is. If he's that guy, A, he's going to be a big-time defensive player of the year candidate, and B, the Chiefs are a team that more people should have picked to maybe make a run at the Super Bowl because I think they are a viable team. Fascinating, too, to me that, you know, Captain Checkdown, whatever you want to call him, Alex Smith appeared to have this just sort of this, like, yeah, you know what? My job's going to be gone in a year anyway. I'm going to throw it deep. I mean, sort of like it was almost like a little bit of Jay Cutler to him, you know, like, bleep, I'm going to throw it deep. And it's almost sad because you're like, Alex, where has that been your entire career? Cut it loose, man. You've got this accuracy. You're a smart decision maker. Mm-hmm. Cut this ball loose. And I mean, the shot he hit Kareem Hunt on down the field, that was beautiful. You know, a couple more strikes. He found Tyreek Hill, exploited some bad coverage by Stephon Gilmore. And, I mean, I don't think he's going to throw deep all season. But if he does, the Chiefs are a lot more explosive offensively than we thought. Certainly, you want to make sure Tyreek Hill is healthy, though, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, Tyreek Hill had that long touchdown. Alex Smith hit him in stride. And I, as a troll, tweeted, you guys know Alex Smith can throw deep, right? And then, of course, I got the fair feedback of, oh, it's one play, blah, blah, blah. I thought about that Colts game in the playoffs a few years ago where he was chucking the ball downfield to, like, Donnie Avery and making big plays. And then, I mean, this was just from that point forward, he was phenomenal. I mean, he was chucking the ball downfield and not making dangerous throws. He wasn't throwing up 50-50 balls. He wasn't, you know, Blake Bortles or it or anything. Like, he was throwing accurate passes 20, 25 yards downfield and hitting them.
He was better down the field than Tom Brady was. I mean, he was better as a quarterback. He just looked like a better quarterback than Tom Brady did yesterday. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of jump to conclusion stuff where, you know, Tom Brady's 40, he's about to hit a cliff. And I mean, I would personally tap the brakes. You would too tap the brakes. I mean, it's a concern, but you tap the brakes because who doesn't remember 2014 when, it, you know, Bill, is it time to think about the backup situation? Time to look at Jimmy Garoppolo and then the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't be worried about Brady necessarily. There are concerns maybe about the offense, but you'd figure they're pretty fixable. I would be more maybe excited about Alex Smith, given how effective he was in this offense. Honestly, it was a really fascinating game plan from the Chiefs. There was a ton of weird option stuff, which they've done a little bit of in the past, but they really double down on it. A bunch of like multiple shovel passes, multiple option pitches.
Kelsey is the Wildcat.
Yeah.
Wildcat option. I mean, sure, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in there, which is cool. I wonder if it will be something they keep doing over the course of the season. I wonder if they just were like, okay, we have to install some weird stuff to throw off the Patriots, and we're going to do that, and then we're going to have it on film and then not do it again because we can't do it week after week. We're going to get Alex Smith killed, which is not out of the question. But I do think that it was an interesting game plan from a team that, you know, probably had to try some stuff to beat the Patriots. You don't want to try and beat them with a very conventional scheme. You want to try and do some David tactics, try and do some strange things, throw them off. And if I'm concerned about anything, if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm concerned about the pass rush, which just was not impactful in this game really whatsoever, and didn't get better as the game went on. They lost Dont'a Hightower, who was pretty much playing as a edge defender, as an edge rusher, during the game with an injury. And I mean, it's not looking good there. I joked with Damian Woody during the game and said, Dwight Freeney should, what happened to Dwight Freeney's phone? Is he not picking up his phone at this point? Because it seems like they have to sign someone like that who, even if it's for 15, 20 snaps a game next to Trey Flowers, is going to be a situational pass rusher. I mean, they spent so much of this game in their dime package with five defensive backs on the field, and they just were not getting much of a rush whatsoever.
Yeah, that's the bigger red flag to me than the offense, because you have Tom Brady, you know, you have these versatile running backs, you have all these weapons in the passing game, you have Rob Gronkowski, you have Josh McDaniels, you're going to fix the offense. I mean, they're just going to do it. Now, defensively, of course, they also have Matt Patricia and Bill freaking Belichick. So they trade with Chandler Jones and trade Jamie Collins and then go out and win the Super Bowl with a good defense. So they'll get better. And, I mean, I think you have to sort of blindly believe that they'll get better. And I do wonder, you know, Belichick looked as mad as he's ever looked, I think, that game. But and that they are short on pieces in terms of what they need. And if Hightower, I think Ian Rappaport, or maybe probably some, Adam Schefter probably did too, but a MCL sprain, and they feel like Hightower might be able to play in week two. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be opposed to holding him out and letting him get healthy. Belichick's big thing has always been quarter seasons, and I think he's smart about that. I'm sure lots of NFL coaches do it, obviously. But, you know, the team that you have in September is not the team that you have in November, and it's certainly not the team you have in January. And I would expect that the Patriots, because this is what the Patriots do, is they make adjustments. But the reality of the situation is that as good as the depth chart looked 4 weeks ago, you know, they don't have Edelman at wide receiver. They don't have that pass rush. I mean, Kony Ealy, you know, it's like, Belichick got Kony Ealy. He's going to be a 15-sack guy. He's on the Jets now. And so I think that the reality of what they have in terms of pass rushing weapons really set in last night with an inability to get pressure on Alex Smith, although you give the Chiefs credits for having a pretty good offensive line.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs offensive line did a very good job. A couple holding penalties here or there, but otherwise a very solid performance. Akeem Harris, who worked out for the Patriots this week, come back into play as a, you know, kind of a low-cost edge rusher. They're going to always explore trades. You know, if there's someone who's out of a rotation, a veteran who's on a pretty subpar team, it's not out of the question they trade for somebody to kind of fill a role. They do that pretty frequently in September, so that wouldn't surprise me either, but a team where, you know, as deep as they are in a lot of positions, that's a place where they aren't deep. And as great as they looked at wide receiver, you're starting to see some holes there now, given that you've lost Edelman for the year. You've lost Malcolm Mitchell, who was placed on injured reserve yesterday for about half the season, it looks like, if not the full season. They've lost Danny Amendola, who, of course, looked good yesterday, but is someone who is perennially an injury concern and suffered a concussion in a bigger role last night, or appears to have suffered a concussion, was in the concussion protocol. So a lot of question marks there in terms of injuries, and I think they're going to be fine. You know, if you told me in week one, hey, you're going to have Brandon Cooks, Chris Hogan, and Rob Gronkowski as your top three receivers, and we're going to have Deion Lewis and James White coming out of the backfield, that's a pretty good receiving core. I think you're going to be just fine. But, you know, you're losing a lot of your depth there. Now you're one injury away from being really thin at wide receiver, which is a concern. But on the flip side, and this is a real bummer given how good he was last year, and just, you know, his story and how great of a player he's been, Eric Berry looks like he has torn his Achilles. He's in for testing today as we're recording this, but it seemed last night certainly like it was an Achilles injury, which obviously would keep him out for the year, which is just a heartbreaking injury for the Chiefs, given how effective he was last year, how impactful he's been as a player. And it's not fair to say how much they paid him, because, like, obviously you're paying him knowing he might get hurt, but it just has to feel brutal that you commit so much money to sign this guy, and you have him, you know, you think, okay, well, we have this guy locked up and he's our star, he's good. And this is a really serious injury. He might not be the player he was before this torn Achilles.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, clearly a torn Achilles for any athlete is a major problem. I mean, yeah, that's where your explosion. But, you know, you talk about a guy who is, you know, like the play on the fourth and short when he busts into the hole and then, mm-hmm. you know, creates the leverage for Houston. You know, I mean, it's like it makes that stop. I mean, this is a guy who is explosive. I mean, he flipped two games for the Chiefs last year alone on pick sixes, and that's part of his explosive athleticism. And if you have an Achilles injury, you almost think that it's worse than the ACL because it might take, I don't know, 18 months to get that explosion back fully. And
yeah.
And you have to be careful because that's an injury that I think more so than the, and I'm the furthest thing from a medical doctor outside of my 8 years of college, but I think that the ACL, that the Achilles is almost more likely to be an aggravated re-injury situation than the ACL sometimes. And, you know, 29 years old, the battle back from lymphoma, incredible story, defensive player of the year candidate last year. And I think that, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you are thrilled that the Chiefs went in to New England and beat the Patriots. You're peacocking around, but that Eric Berry injury is going to take a big toll on that defense when it comes to the back end, because he's a star player and they're probably going to lose him for the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, it's really frustrating just when you think about, okay, well, we're getting Justin Houston back and he looked great. You know, if he's going to be the guy he was 2 years ago, suddenly, oh, we have multiple superstars on this defense. We have Marcus Peters, we have Eric Berry, we have Justin Houston. Those are three guys who might be top three players, top five players with their respective positions. And now, obviously, that's not going to be the case with Berry done for the year.
Well, and just to, I mean, like, when you think about those three guys, you're like, all right, we're going to get pressure on the passer on, you know, 50% of the plays. Peters, they're not going to throw at Peters, so Eric Berry can just shade over on the side that they're going to throw on, and you really have an ability to squeeze offenses, and it goes away if Barry's not on the back end there.
Yeah, for sure. Only other guy we haven't got to yet, and he had a phenomenal game, especially for fantasy purposes, is Kareem Hunt, who, I mean, it's you don't want to pick offensive rookie of the year after one game. It seems like it's unfair, but man, I mean, just all-purpose threat for the Chiefs, and just a guy who, it does seem kind of crazy. He fell to what, the fourth round of the draft?
Third round.
I think crazy.
It is. I think it's third round. Yeah, third round, 86th overall, out of Toledo. And how about Mike Golic Jr. with an incredible tweet. He said, this feels like after he fumbles on his first career run. He's never fumbled in college. And then he's like, this feels like something in 4 years. Kareem Hunt's never fumbled. And it's a funny piece of trivia. I mean, how about four quarters?
Yeah.
He looks, I think that Andy Reid paid him the highest possible compliment that Andy Reid could pay a running back when he said after the game, he reminds me of Brian Westbrook, not Brian Westbrook player, but that he thinks on his feet. And you could really see it. I mean, you know, he aside from the fumble, and the fumble was caused, I thought, because he was fighting for those extra yards and probably thinking more about fighting for the yards than securing the ball. You could tell after that he was very much interested in securing the football.
Yes.
And next gen stats per Matt Harmon, 88 yards gained after Kareem Hunt had a defender within 1 yard of him. That is bananas. I mean, that's explosion, Bill.
Wow.
And that's something that, you know, I think he looks like he could be a monster this year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's always unfair to say, who is it? Last year, Will Fuller looked awesome after the first two games of the year, and he kind of just died off. And, you know, obviously he has to stay healthy. There will be games where he'll be playing tougher defenses than the Patriots. But, I mean, just a really, really solid game from him, and someone who already, like, if you have Kareem Hunt and Mike Gillisley in fantasy football, you feel so good about yourself. And I don't. And I don't feel good about myself, unfortunately.
I actually got, I was drafting, like, my oldest league. We've been doing it since, like, 99, I think, because we all got in college. And we were drafting on Friday that night when Spencer Ware went down and Edelman went down. So I got Cooks in the sixth and Kareem Hunt in the seventh. I mean, look, Hunt, The problem was after the Spencer Ware injury, Hunt just became a third round pick, and it was risky to invest that in a, you know, in a rookie not named McCaffrey. But I think, you know, you look at the case for Hunt, just from a fantasy perspective, Andy Reid feeds one guy, and he likes pass catching backs. He likes guys with explosion. He likes guys who can run between the chains and between the tackles. Excuse me. And I think that Kareem Hunt fits the bill. That's why he spent a third round pick on him, and he's not afraid to throw him out there. I was really impressed with Andy Reid too. After the Hunt fumble, he could have gone up, and he stuck by him and he fed him the ball, and Kareem Hunt rewarded that significantly.
Yeah, I mean, he got the ball on the very next play, I believe, after he fumbled. And they really just the very next snap on offense, they gave him the ball. Yeah, he touched the ball 3-4 times on that drive. So, yeah, I mean, it was a drive where...
He had one catch and three carries, I think, on that drive. And mm-hmm. the only carry he didn't have on that drive was the Kelce run.
It's so weird. That's like... That is so strange, given the 18 other crazy things that happened in this game. Well, we have a lot to preview, so let's get to some of the other things that we're going to talk about as we preview games this Friday. We'll do some different things every week, but this week, given that we're just getting started with the year, we're going to preview a bunch of games. And let's start with a game in the AFC that I think is really fascinating. Two teams that are going to be on the cusp of playoff contention. You know, the numbers say one of them is going to decline, one of them might be expected to improve, perhaps, but a really fascinating matchup. Raiders at Titans, where the Titans are actually... 2.5-point favorites. Does that surprise you, Will?
Not as much as everyone picking the Titans.
Really?
Surprises me. Yeah, I think there's... I got to look at the actual number. I mean, I believe that... I know that, like, all of our NFL experts, and, you know, these take that for what you're worth, but all the CBS people picked the Titans to cover against the spread, which is really surprising. But we also all had... You know, the Titans to the Titans to win the division. I'm a little concerned that the world is blindly accepting the concept of Mike Mularkey, a consistent team that's just going to win. Now, Sports Insights had 61% of the bets on Oakland, so maybe I'm just off there. I have Tennessee as one of my best bets of the week. I think that the matchup against Oakland, which you know, Oakland is very much hyped this year. They won 12 games. They deserve the hype. Derek Carr's great. Amari Cooper and Crabtree are fantastic. Marshawn Lynch is a big name, and I love him, and I wouldn't rule out him doing a lot of good stuff for Oakland. But that defense does not match up well against Tennessee, in my opinion. I don't think that they're going to be able to stem the tide of DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry if Titans run these formation versatile attack that they ran last year. And I just think Tennessee has the ability to grind this team out, although Oakland could certainly put up some points to keep it close.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest sort of... that's the point where when I'm looking at this game, that's where I started my analysis and where I thought, okay, well, Tennessee's going to win this game, and this is where it's going to happen, because Raiders front seven is a bit of a mess right now. Khalil Mack suddenly has a knee injury. It looks like he's going to play, but he's not 100%, it looks like. They already lost Stacey McGee and Dan Williams, who they cut this offseason. Jihad Ward has missed most of camp with a knee injury. They're getting Mario Edwards Jr. back after he missed a lot of 2016, but they're starting two rookies up the middle. They're starting Eddie Vanderduz, third-round pick at defensive tackle, and then Marquel Lee is going to start the fifth-rounder at middle linebacker, it seems like. So, I mean, you're asking a lot out of two guys who are making their NFL debuts against one of the five best offensive lines and one of the five best, maybe the best running game, some might say, in all of football. And certainly one of the most, you know, versatile and one of the most, I think that's also, you know, not just power, but also can be tricky at times with Marcus Mariota and all the things he can do. I mean, you're just asking a lot of those guys. So if the Titans get ahead in this game, it kind of feels like they're going to have a lot of success running the football and be able to do a lot of things in terms of running clock and holding on to the ball.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I mean, look, I've outthought myself on this, and I mean, seriously, I got a little worried when I was picking the Titans. Like, I'm doing the Super Contest this year, and I had the Titans as one of my picks, and I'm worried that kiss of death. I'm worried I'm going to have them, but I think the thing about Week One, Bill, is that you kind of have to. We don't have anything to go off of outside of, you know, what we've done. I mean, look, if you've done your homework and you've studied for the test, you can't change your answers when you get in the room, right?
Right.
I mean, like, don't, you know, and in my mind, Tennessee is a very good football team that is capable of being physical at the point of attack and running the ball down people's throats. And I thought the thing too that sort of flies under the radar. I know Mariota's been a hot fantasy sleeper, but you know, those first couple of games last year, you could see really a transition with him getting comfortable in that offense and running the different, you know, the different things under center. And that is a transition for a guy who played at Oregon, you know, even mm-hmm. in his second year. And I thought by the middle of the season, he was on fire, and he's so dangerous in the red zone. And they had Delanie Walker, who's criminally underrated. They added Corey Davis. They added Eric Decker. I mean, this is a team that is set up to move the ball down the field aggressively with the run. And then when space gets compressed, be able to do a lot of things in the pass. And I think that they're just going to be tough to stop. And like you said, these young guys for Oakland, if Khalil Mack's not 100%, I don't see how they stop the run, barring Tennessee getting too cute and outthinking themselves.
Yeah. I mean, this is a Raiders team that, okay, they brought in Gary and Conley this offseason as their first-round pick, and you figure he's going to maybe replace Sean Smith by the end of the season, given how much Smith struggled last year. But he's not going to play very much in this game. He just got activated off the physically unable to perform list. He's not going to play a meaningful role. He might even not be active. And if he is, he's going to probably play 10 or 15 snaps. So you're going to get Sean Smith versus Eric Decker versus Rishard Matthews, maybe versus Corey Davis, who himself has a hamstring injury and isn't 100%. But it seems more likely to, you know, play 25 snaps in this game than Gary and Conley does. So there is a possible mismatch in the passing game, which wasn't really there last season. And who knows if it's going to work out. Decker, you know, might not be his old self. Davis isn't 100% yet, but there are question marks there for sure. And the only thing I would say maybe that would concern me from a Tennessee side is that their cornerbacks also have some issues. LeSean Sims was going to start a corner, and he injured his groin Monday during practice. He might be out. So Adoree Jackson, who was inconsistent during the preseason, at best, might be pressed into a starting role against the Raiders offense that, you know, has Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper out there at cornerbacks. That could be a little worrisome.
Yeah, I probably a slap in the face by me to just gloss over the Raiders offense here. I mean, you know, look, they're going to put up points. I think I really want to see Marshawn Lynch in this game because the defensive line for Tennessee is, you know, not that bad. I think Jarrell Casey's criminally underrated. And this is a team that, you know, if the Raiders are going to be what they claim, or at least we think they claim they're going to be with Marshawn Lynch and that offensive line, I mean, they should be able to establish the run. And this, you know, this should be a game where, you know, Oakland can put up points if they're going to be that offense that we think they're going to be. And it wouldn't be surprising if Tennessee ran the ball effectively and then Oakland had to mount a furious 14-17 point comeback, and they mounted it. I mean, yeah, that's what they did last year, and they can chunk the ball down the field quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's their calling card, and I'm the numbers guy, and I'm going to say that that's not going to happen again, but it also wouldn't surprise me to see it happen a couple times this year, and this would be a game where it's certainly plausible it could happen. Tennessee was 30th in DVOA against running backs, in terms of passes to running backs last offseason. Didn't really add a ton to help that out. Jonathan Cyprian is not a good coverage safety. Jayon Brown, their fifth-round pick, looked good in preseason, but is probably not going to be playing meaningful snaps in pass coverage, so it's probably just going to be Wesley Woodyard again and guys like that, where it could be a game where Jalen Richard makes a big play or two in the passing game as a receiving back.
What's the over on this game?
it's high. It's high, and it should be high.
59.5, right?
God. Yeah, it's 50.5.
Mike Mularkey, Jack Del Rio. I mean, why wouldn't you take a 50.5 point over with those two coaches in charge?
it's going to be interesting. I think it's a really fascinating game. It could go a lot of different ways. So it sounds like you're taking Tennessee.
Yes. I like Tennessee to win. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think Tennessee will effectively look like the better team. And I'm sure that Oakland will screw me late.
Oh, will that involve the returning and not released Sebastian Janikowski?
Oh, maybe. No, I think it'll involve like a Derek Carr Hail Mary of some sort to lose by two. or like this 2-point conversion to tie the game up late, and then we wonder whether the Raiders learned how to win during a crazy 2016 or something.
Interesting. Yeah. I buy that. I mean, I think it'll be a really fascinating game, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's probably my favorite game from the Sunday afternoon slate so far this year. We have more games coming after the break, and there's more Bill Barnwell Show coming in a moment. But first, guys, I've got some interesting facts for you here from the folks at Gillette. Did you know the tip of a Gillette razor blade is measured on an atomic scale, that means their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell. And that precision is the work of many brain cells. The hundreds of members of Gillette's research and development team have spent over 4,700 years combined working to make your shave closer and more comfortable. That's longer than the Egyptian pyramids have been around. And while over 1,000 craftsmen and women in Boston are busy making your blades, probably upset about the Patriots right now, but they're still busy making your blades, another team is putting your blades through more than 60 extremely strict and precise quality checks. If they fail just one of these tests, it does not leave the factory. In other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now, that includes the price tag. You can get Gillette blades at their lowest prices in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer. Hey guys, we're back here with Will Brinson of CBS talking about week one of the NFL season. But before we get to that, let's talk about week one of DraftKings, where they're hosting a $100,000 contest this Sunday that is totally free to enter. And if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. That's my name, Bill. $1 billion. A lot of money. You can win that if you draft the perfect lineup. And of course, with DraftKings, there are so many different ways to play. You can choose between public contests with big cash prizes like that. Again, $1 billion cash prize. Or a private contest where you can compete against a group of your friends. They have beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people with similar skill levels to you. And of course, you get to draft a new team every week without any commitment. If you have Julian Edelman on your roster, which some of us do, I'm not going to say who, but maybe it's a person doing this read, you get a new team every week. You're not stuck with him for the entire year, ruining your pick and wishing you took Kareem Hunt two rounds before you were planning on taking him. So you can do that every week with DraftKings. And even better, if you go to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Barnwell, you can play in this week's free contest for $100,000 in total prizes and win $1 billion if you get the perfect lineup. Again, promo code Barnwell for your shot to win $1 billion this Sunday. DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply, and see DraftKings.com for details. A matchup that seems like, actually both these matchups seem like they happen week one every year in the NFC. So it seems like it's always Giants-Cowboys, which we'll get to a little later, and it's always the Eagles and Washington. Just thinking about, of course, the Chip Kelly game in Monday Night Football a couple years ago. It seems like these teams are always lining up, and this is a matchup of two teams that I don't really know what to make of either of them right now. I mean, I could see either of them taking a step backwards and finishing in last place. I could see either of them taking a leap forward and winning the division. They're in that weird mix of the NFC East. So, Will, do you think there's any reason to differentiate between one or the other of these two teams?
Well, I mean, I agree with you completely. I think that we're going to make a knee-jerk reaction after this game that's going to be wrong in 3 weeks.
Yes, I agree.
That's the only thing I do know. To me, the thing that stands out, Bill, for Philadelphia is the front seven, which I think is about as deep as it gets in the NFL. I mean, maybe every single player isn't an elite pass rusher per se, but Derek Barnett looks like he belongs. They added Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. I mean, Chris Long is coming over from New England. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pass rush. And for the Redskins, the thing that you hate to take away too much from the preseason, but it really feels like the transition from Sean McVay as offensive coordinator and calling plays to Jay Gruden, who's now calling plays and coaching the game, along with the shift from DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, who Kirk Cousins has worked with for a long time, to Terrell Pryor, and now Josh Doctson is going to have to get worked in there. Jameson Crowder, of course, still there, and Jordan Reed. It just feels like the Redskins offense they literally did change drivers. They pulled over to rest stop and they changed drivers, and this driver is sort of getting a feel for it. And it feels a little stop-go-y right now, and they didn't look great. Mm-hmm. It's preseason, you can't take too much away from it, but I do think I think you worry about that if you're Washington, that the offense isn't in flow and you've got to start off, off the bat against a team that has a really good pass rush.
Yeah, it could be a game where this happens to the Giants once or twice a year, usually against the Vikings, where it'll be like a game where from the first drive, you just know the pass rush is taking over and the game's over. and there's just nothing you can do about it. I will say, in their defense, the Eagles, or sorry, Washington's offensive line is significantly better than the Giants. So if there's one thing I think I can count on with Washington where I say, okay, well, at least I have faith this part of the team is going to show up, I would say the offensive line would be the part I'd have the most faith in. So maybe they'll be able to hold it. That's going to be a really fascinating matchup between those two teams. Maybe the biggest strength for Washington could be their offensive line, and the biggest strength for Philadelphia could be their defensive line. So that could be the most important matchup of the game. For me, I think the one thing I would be concerned about if I was an Eagles fan, and the one thing that maybe Washington might be able to take advantage of, is that the Eagles' depth chart at cornerback is still, at best, a work in progress, given that they just traded for Ronald Darby. He's only been there for a couple weeks. You had Jalen Mills, who was pretty bad last year. He's going to be starting. You have Patrick Robinson, who hasn't been good for most of his career, who's going to be starting in the slot. They could, it depends on who's in the slot. I mean, you would figure Jamison Crowder, he's limited with a hip flexor, but he looks like he's going to play most of the snaps in the slot, of course. That's a mismatch. Now, Jamison Crowder is one of the best slot guys in football. Patrick Robinson just isn't a very good slot cornerback. And then Washington could put Jordan Reed in the slot, where you have maybe Malcolm Jenkins dropping down to play a slot corner, and then you have a Corey Graham coming in. I mean, there's a lot of question marks about that Philadelphia secondary and whether they can hold up against, when healthy and when effective, certainly a very deep Washington receiving corps.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. I mean, look, if the Redskins offensive line does its job and holds up and protects Kirk Cousins, and the Redskins are able to flood the middle and the deep part of the field with Pryor, Doxson, Crowder, and Reed, that's going to be trouble for the Eagles. That is absolutely what you worry about. That's where the football game is definitely going to be won, but I think that's the matchup, that offensive line of the Redskins versus the defensive line of the Eagles, where if the Eagles can overpower them, then you're going to really see Kirk Cousins get flustered. And I think if you're a Redskins fan, what you do not want is the Eagles to get up and force Kirk to have to play a catch-up game where, I think this is obvious, but he's much better in sort of the offensive flow where he can be a point guard and distribute as opposed to being a guy that has to chuck it a bunch and come back. Defensively for the Redskins, I think they do have a nice matchup with Josh Norman in terms of the style of cornerback and the style of player that Alshon Jeffrey is. We might not find out totally whether the Eagles made a good investment in Alshon Jeffrey in week one.
Yeah, that's fair. Do you think they're going to, and certainly the Eagles seem to think so, do you think they will? Do you think they should have Josh Norman shadow Alshon Jeffrey across the field?
Yeah, I do. He's done it enough where, and Jeffrey's not a take the top off guy, right? So if you make a mistake, I think Josh Norman is capable of recovering from any if he makes a mistake in coverage on Jeffrey, it's not going to result in Jeffrey being 15 yards wide open. I think there's some recovery area there for him if he does make a mistake. And Jeffrey's such a basketball, rebound receiver that to me, it would make sense to shadow him. They didn't shadow Antonio Brown, totally different receiver, of course. They didn't shadow him last year. Maybe you learn from that mistake and do something different.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's totally plausible. And the thing that would interest me, if they're having him follow Jeffrey around the field, you figure they're going to be in a lot of man coverage. You can shadow him and still play some zone, but you figure it's mostly going to be man coverage if that's the case. And then I wonder about not really Norman on Jeffrey or even Bashaud Breeland on Torrey Smith, though that could end up a mismatch if Smith does, because if Smith gets open, it could be goodnight, it could be a touchdown. But I wonder about Zach Ertz versus Zach Brown or DJ Swearinger, which I could think could be a real mismatch if the Eagles can get him open, because in Washington's missing Stuart Cravens, who thought about retiring, who is away from the team, might be done with football, we don't know yet, but Cravens would have been that guy. Cravens could be a cover safety and would be a guy who you'd figure would do a good job against Ertz, if he's on his game. So Ertz against Swearinger is a major mismatch. Swearinger's not good in coverage, and Brown is a guy who you impressed with Buffalo last year, but I still think it's going to be a little stretched. Ertz is
he's undersized and fast, but that's not going to help you sack Ertz.
Right, that's the thing, is that and they have a bunch of tight ends. They can throw out three different tight ends who can catch the football. So if they do go with man coverage, I could see that being the place where the Eagles do take advantage of it in the passing game.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is you have these guys, you have LeGarrette Blount, who's sort of the headline guy that's coming out of the, you know, this running back thing. But I think in a situation like that, if you could recognize that they're going to be in man coverage a lot, you have Darren Sproles and Wendell Smallwood, and you know, those guys aren't going to be, they're not DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, but you can get the ball in space to them out of the backfield, let them catch the ball, let them make plays, and you could pick up chunk yardage that way and sort of force the Redskins to adjust out of that man coverage. And then all of a sudden, maybe you can move, you know, I mean, that's the chess match, right? If you can force the Redskins into a zone and you can get Alshon Jeffery and Breshad Breeland, then you have a downfield dance party for Carson Wentz.
I like that downfield dance party
idea. I trademarked that. That was pretty good.
That'd be a good poster. If Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith break out, that could be a good poster. Downfield dance party. Not a downfield dance party, LeGarrette Blount in the Eagles running game. Let me ask you, more so than this game, more in the long term, how do you think this running game sort of shakes out in terms of carries? Like, who do you think in week 17 we're going to look back and say, okay, well, this guy got 200 carries for the Eagles this year?
I wish it was Donnell Pumphrey, but they don't seem to love him. So.
Yeah, not yet at least.
I love Donnell Pumphrey, but we'll see. I actually think he'll end up starting a couple of games and playing well. Maybe I'm just delusional. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's weird because it just doesn't make any sense to have LeGarrette Blount as the running back in this Doug Peterson style offense, but you do have a decent, you know, you have an offensive line that can you know, open up some holes and. Mm-hmm. I think that what you want to try and use is Blount as sort of a hammer. You don't want to get predictable in short yardage, and you don't want to be predictable on first down either. And I would assume that Doug Peterson won't do that. But, you know, Blount has to be the guy to get the carries, right? I don't trust him away from New England at all, but I don't see how you can give Wendell Smallwood 250 carries and think that that's going to be the answer. Maybe it is. I don't know. I think Blount has to be the answer by default, but I'm perplexed by it.
Yeah, it does seem like even when they signed him, it was like, okay, well, yeah, he's pretty cheap. Cost $1.25 million. He had 17 or whatever touchdowns last year. It's not a big deal either way, but it's hard to see how he fits into this offense given how limited he is as a receiver and how little he offers there. So maybe he ends up as the goal line guy and he gets, you know, 20% of his carries come inside the 5-yard line or the 10-yard line, which is not the worst use of him given that, again, it's $1.25 million, but... Yeah, it does seem like he's not going to be a huge part of this offense unless they're winning a lot of games and he's getting a lot of carries late. So I'm definitely confused. I don't know the answer. Smallwood seems like he's the most plausible answer, but it could be a guy who's not on the field. Maybe they don't have a guy who gets 200 carries. Maybe they have three guys who get 125 carries each, and that's how they run their offense. But it does seem very curious. Do you have a particular preference in this game? Do you have a team that you feel strongly is going to prevail?
I do. I'm actually about to give away my. But they're on the internet already. I have the Eagles as one of my best bets as well this week.
Interesting.
I actually have the Eagles winning the division.
Me too.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. That makes me feel better then.
I don't know if I would feel better if I were you after hearing that.
I would feel worse if I were you. I think if you're me, you're thrilled. You know, I just think that when you look at I think the Eagles will be able to do some damage division-wise. I think the Eagles can do some damage against the Cowboys and the Redskins because of their defensive fronts against those good offensive lines. I think they're a real mismatch for the Giants defensively. And I know that for all the hand-wringing about Carson Wentz, I do know that Doug Peterson has been a part of developing quarterbacks of different skill sets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wentz flashed at various points in times and looked like a franchise quarterback, regardless of what you think about his mechanics. I mean, look, any outcome's plausible because we've seen quarterbacks who are supposed to be great fall apart. But the weapons that they assembled around him, while not necessarily, you know, quote unquote elite, I think that Alshon Jeffery, Torrey Smith, Mac Hollins, and then those running backs are at least diverse enough to operate within that offense. And I like the Eagles here in this game. I think they're a better team, and I loved them +3. I like them. I still like them +1, even on the road in the divisional game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I don't disagree with a lot of what you said there. So if you're wrong, I'm wrong, which means that you'll probably actually be wrong, but at least we have the same logical underpinnings behind our thoughts. We got two more games to get to here on the Bill Barnwell Show. We'll get back to them in a second. But first, you've probably spent the last couple months preparing for the football season. You probably had about 7 or 8 fantasy football drafts if you listen to this show. You're going to spend a lot of Sundays parked in front of the television, yelling at your TV, pretty upset that your fantasy team's not working out if you're like me. So you probably should make it up to your significant other or some of the people you love by getting them a bouquet of flowers. And there's no better way to make up for that than by sending someone a bouquet from 1-800-Flowers.com. Nothing tops the excitement of a 1-800-Flowers bouquet. And right now, when you order a dozen multicolored roses for $29.99, 1-800-Flowers will give you another dozen absolutely free. That's 50% off the original price. Everyone loves roses. You can't screw up sending roses. It's a beautiful arrangement of vibrant pink, orange, and purple roses that will leave her stunned without spending a fortune. It's the best of both worlds. Amazing roses at an unbeatable price. They're picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness. It's 2 dozen roses for $29.99. That is a small price to pay if you're going to win your fantasy league with all the preparation you put in for the 2 months before the season started. So it's 1-800-Flowers.com, and there's everyone else. So to order a dozen multicolored roses, plus getting an extra bouquet with a dozen more roses for just $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, and enter code Barnwell. That's 1-800-Flowers.com, code Barnwell. A team that disappointed last year, and a team that was very surprising last year at matchup, Cardinals-Lions. I don't know that the Cardinals weren't the better team last year, and I don't know that they're not the better team this year.
I think they were definitely the better team last year. The Detroit Lions, you, not like you would actually have a poster with that says regression in your, you might, I don't know.
If anyone does, it's me.
You have a regression and then like you swap out a different face. I mean, aren't the Lions the ultimate regression candidate? They had 9 wins last year and 8 of them, I believe, featured fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives by Matthew Stafford, which is fantastic for his clutchability and grit, late-game grittiness, but it is something that is not it's just not sustainable. That's not how you win football games in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Arizona, I trust Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer as smart football guys, and they said that when Carson changes throwing patterns during the season, that it changed how he looked, and he did. He looked great down the stretch, and it kind of flew under the radar because one game was in the rain when Ryan Tannehill tore his ACL, and you know, people were sort of toning out the Cardinals because they were so far removed from the playoff race. But he looked really good down the stretch. John Brown, if he's healthy, and Larry Fitzgerald, I think these guys are big time mismatches for the Detroit defense. And David Johnson is a probably not a viable MVP candidate, but certainly a viable, you know, offensive player of the year candidate because of how good he is. And I think that defensively, with Taylor Decker out and Greg Robinson starting for the Lions at left tackle, they are still planning that going with that play. And I believe that the Cardinals can really put some pass rush on Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I mean, I think you start with the Lions defense, which dead last in DVOA last year. And yes, they used their top 2 picks on defensive players. Jared Davis is going to start at middle linebacker. Tease Tabor will be a backup cornerback right now. I don't think he's really ready to step in. But, I mean, their biggest free agent addition this offseason on the defense was DJ Hayden. And that's not where you want to be. And maybe Tavon Wilson. But, I mean, Tavon Wilson was a year ago. Excuse me. I apologize. But DJ Hayden, maybe Cornelius Washington, who's going to start at defensive end now that Kerry Hyder is done for the year. I mean, you're not signing guys who are stars. You're signing the backups from pretty bad defenses. So it's hard for me to believe this defense is going to be significantly better than it was a year ago. You would figure maybe just because of the dead cat bounce, they'll bounce from 32nd to 29th maybe in DVOA. But there's a lot of question marks. And I'm concerned about Ziggy Ansah, who missed all of training camp, it seemed like, with either a knee or an ankle injury. It's been reported alternately in different places. Coming off of a high ankle sprain last year that cost him a chunk of the season, he wasn't his usual self for most of the time. I mean, there's not a pass rush looming here. There's not a guy where you think, okay, well, this guy has upside besides Ansah, who doesn't look to be at 100%. I mean, he's the only guy who seems like a functional pass rusher on this roster. And That's a big difference if you're playing the Cardinals, because they want to chuck it downfield. And when you give Carson Palmer time, he's really good. He was 7th in the league last year in QBR when he was unpressured, and it was 28th when he was pressured. So if they're not going to get pressure on Carson Palmer, that could be a field day. That could just be a thing where he has all day to chuck it up and find, you know, John Brown and Larry Fitzgerald 20 yards downfield against a secondary that, outside of Darius Slay, who's very good, does not offer very much in the way of cornerback depth.
I mean, yeah, you nailed it. And look, I think Jerod Davis could very well end up winning the Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL this year, but because he leads the league in tackles, but not because he's, you know, I mean, like, he's just going to be making a lot of tackles when guys get through the line of scrimmage. The biggest concern, and I think I said this about, I say this about stuff all the time, and it seems dumb, but in the NFL it concerns me. The biggest concern is that the Cardinals are too obvious here. You know, like, it's, like, this is such a blatant mismatch between an offense that, you said, likes to throw it deep and is not as good when it's pressured, and a defense that can't hold up against the deep ball and that can't generate any pressure. I don't see how the Cardinals don't put up 30 points here unless they just decide to not use David Johnson or not throw it deep. And Bruce Arians is, I mean, like, if Bruce Arians gets kidnapped tonight or on Saturday night, and he doesn't end up coaching, and instead they are coached by, like, Jim Caldwell has to coach both teams, then maybe they won't throw it deep. I just don't see how the Lions hold up against the Cardinals' vertical attack.
I'm just imagining Steve Keim walks into the Cardinals facility, and he walks in, doesn't hear anything, and it's like 6 a.m., and he figures Bruce Arians should already be there, and he's just walking through, knocks on the door. Hey, Bruce. No answer. Hey, Bruce, you in there? He opens the door, and there's just a Kangol on the floor. Bruce Arians' Kangol. It's just the only sign he's been kidnapped with a note, a ransom note, asking for money. I like that idea a lot. I kind of want to spend the last half hour of the show just talking about that, but I will say we should get back to football.
Are we ranking the coaches least and most likely to be kidnapped?
Oh, God. That's another question altogether. This is an entirely different show. This is an entirely different show.
It's an off-season show. It's an off-season show.
That is definitely an off-season show. Just ranking the coaches and who is most likely to be blank is 100% a great off-season show we will have to do. I will say this. If the Cardinals have problems in this game, you would figure it would be on the defensive side of the ball. And they were good last year in defense, but they have lost 5 defensive starters to free agency and Swearinger, who we just mentioned earlier, Tony Jefferson, Marcus Cooper in the secondary, Kevin Minter at inside linebacker, and then Calais Campbell at defensive end. And they did invest a lot in their defense to replace those guys this offseason, but there's question marks. I mean, Deion Buchanan, who you'd figure play a big role, is out with the ankle injury, so that's a 6th starter from a year ago. So Hassan Reddick, their first-round pick, is going into the lineup next to Carlos Dansby, who is 87 years old and still somehow good. Robert Nkemdiche looked really good during the preseason, but then suffered a calf injury. He's going to play, it looks like, but he's not going to be 100% replacing Calais Campbell. Cornerback, which we'll get to in a second, is still a question mark. I mean, do you think there is a, of those guys, is there one in particular that stands out as really tough to replace if you're the Cardinals?
Oh, yeah, it's Calais Campbell. I mean, he was their linchman. I picked the Cardinals to win the Super Bowl because I'm a lunatic. And I think it hinges on two guys. One, Robert Kimdichi, because they drafted Robert Kimdichi and DJ Humphreys with first round picks in successive years. And the Cardinals did what they like to do, which is redshirt guys. And they need them to step in this year and be able to impact this team right away. I do think that sometimes when you do a fantasy draft, you have a plan and you go into it and things go differently. Well, I think, you know, that's why it's a fantasy draft. It replicates real life. I think Steve Keim had a legitimate plan to pursue a potential future quarterback in this last draft, whether it was Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And when trades happened, he got an opening to sort of zig when guys were zagging . And he comes away with Hassan Reddick and Buda Baker, who, you know, they're young and they're going to make mistakes, but they are perfect for this defense because this defense is, I think Mays even maybe pointed out, positionless was the best way to describe it. It's just a malleable defense, and you can move guys all over the place. You know, they have, you can send blitzes from everywhere. You can just be really creative. I think the defense is going to end up being better than it was last year, but that certainly hinges on Kimdichi being able to replace, 75% of Calais Campbell in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say the biggest weakness of this defense is going to be that defensive line and maybe the interior of the defense, where I think teams are going to have some success running the football on them. And I don't know that the Lions are that team necessarily. We'll see. I mean, they did invest in their offensive line this offseason. They signed TJ Lang. They signed Ricky Wagner, the right side of the line. You know, has been revamped versus having Riley Reiff and Larry Warford there last year. So they've invested. But again, you talked about Taylor Decker being out, Greg Robinson, who was bad in Los Angeles, does look good during the preseason. You know, maybe he's improved, but I'm going to have to see that before I believe it. So, yeah, I'm certainly skeptical of Lions, and I'm skeptical of their fit in this game. It just seems like a bad matchup for them. So I feel pretty comfortable taking the Cardinals.
Same here. I would say two things quickly about this. That I think Greg Robinson actually fits the schematic a little bit better. You know, maybe a short, you know, short, quick drops, get the ball out. You know, the Jim Bob Cooter wants to run rather than, you know, trying to be some, you know, this power left tackle for Jeff Fisher, just based on the way he came out of college. And then the sneaky matchup here, of course, you remember on All or Nothing, the Cardinals wanted to draft Ameer Abdullah, and the Lions snaked him, and they ended up having to take David Johnson around later. They don't play each other, but Abdullah David Johnson to haunt Steve Keim's dreams.
Yeah, it is brutal.
I think he's probably fine with it.
Yeah, I think he's probably okay with it now. it's of course the Cowboys, you know, wanting Paxton Lynch, wanting Connor Cook, and just having to settle for Dak Prescott. Nobody knows anything.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Yeah, it's always better to be lucky than good when it comes to the NFL. And speaking of those Dallas Cowboys, let's finish up there. Cowboys, Giants, and the two stars, they have many stars, but the two biggest stars in this game are question marks. Odell Beckham seems like may not play with an ankle injury. He is very questionable at best to play, let alone play a meaningful role. And Ezekiel Elliott actually is going to play. He might not play for the next 6 weeks or next six games, next 7 weeks after this. But at the very least, he is locked and loaded to play in week one. So let me ask you, do you approach this game any differently if you're the Cowboys, given that you know Ezekiel Elliott probably is not going to be around for the weeks to come? Are you overloading him in terms of work? Are you comfortable giving him 30 or even 35 carries in a way that you might not be if he had to play next week, or you knew he was going to be playing 16 games this year? Or do you kind of treat it the same way and just hope that he's going to be around for a while?
I think you have to act like he is going to be around, because at least in my mind, I think he's going to play week two because of the way that I think that, well, I mean, this is outside of football and doesn't answer the question, but I think the judge is going to grant that temporary restraining order because you can kick the can down the road and he can miss games later. But once he misses a game, you can never get that back. And I think that's what you worry about if you're a judge making or a court making this decision. Sure, the Cowboys, I don't think you do anything different. I think you feed Zeke like you were going to feed him in week one of the season, you know, whether he's playing 16 games, whether it's a playoff game. You know, actually, the only time they didn't feed him last year was the playoff game. I think you give Zeke the ball, and you understand that this game against the Giants perhaps takes on more significance because it's a division game, because the Giants beat you, because you have Zeke, and you might end up losing him for six games, and because the margin for this division has shrunk significantly from last year when you were, you know, when you had seven wins under your belt and looked to be cruising. So I think you feed Zeke Elliott as much as possible. And you play to your strength if you're the Cowboys. You don't do anything different. You let that offensive line open up holes. You let Zeke run the ball the way that he does, catch balls out of the backfield, and then let Dak, you know, take shots down the field to Dez. I think you just – the best thing you can do as a football team is to pretend like nothing is happening and try and play your game, because the second you try to adjust for what might happen in the future is when you get out of sync of what you want to do.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I could see a scenario where they do give him 35, 40 carries, but I also, 40 carries might be a little much, but, you know, where they don't even think for a second about taking him off the field just because he might be gone after week two or week three. But I do think that's the more plausible and certainly the more responsible thing to do for sure. On the flip side, how important is this game to you if you're a Giants If you're Ben McAdoo, I said Tom Coughlin. If you're Ben McAdoo, if you're Jerry Reese, if you're the Giants, and given that it's the Cowboys, it's a divisional game, it's week one, I mean, are you rushing Odell Beckham back, or are you more prudent about it and don't want to risk a bigger injury that's going to linger for the weeks to come?
I think you have to be certain that Odell Beckham feels completely confident doing what Odell Beckham does. Mm-hmm. More so than even, like, to me, Odell Beckham, people talk about Jenga pieces all the time. I think that Odell Beckham is a substantially bigger Jenga piece,
yes,
for the Giants offense than Zeke Elliott is for the Cowboys offense. And I think Zeke Elliott is fantastic and mm-hmm. a million times better than Darren McFadden or Alfred Morris. But if Zeke is gone for the year or gone for, you know, hypothetically gone for the year, the Cowboys will survive. If Odell Beckham is gone for the year, I don't think that the Giants offense can be very good because they have a rookie tight end who, look, is very athletic and great in the red zone and high point balls and all of that. They have Brandon Marshall, who is, you know, marvelous in his first year with teams, and Sterling Shepard, who's underrated. But Odell Beckham, and there's a stretch there last year, Bill, when Ben McAdoo is holding up this like 900 play, you know, menu from Golden Corral, and all it does is say like slant to Odell, you know, just throwing slants to Odell and hoping he can break him because the offensive line can't hold up for Eli. And that's such a safety net that if you force Beckham out there against the Cowboys and then he does it and then he re-injures his hamstring mm-hmm. and he has to miss like 6 or 8 weeks because of it, that can tank your season, and it's just not worth it in the first week of the year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who missed time his rookie year with a hamstring injury. And then, I mean, we don't know the specifics of his ankle injury yet. I mean, there's been talk he doesn't have a high ankle sprain. I'm thinking about, and it's unfair because he's not the same sort of player, but I'm thinking about Roddy White, who suffered a high ankle sprain in the preseason a few years ago for the Falcons. And it was kind of a thing when they said, oh, he's just going to play through it. And I thought, you know, I've looked at guys with high ankle sprains in the past, and it's not worked out well for receivers to do this. And he was a statue for a good chunk of the year before they finally said, okay, we just have to sit you. There's no point in having you playing. So I just think with a young superstar, it makes no sense. And if he sits for a week or two, it's a bummer. But if he's useless for half the year, I mean, the season's over. The Giants, just as good as the defense can be, this offense is built around Odell Beckham. I mean, even if it is Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram and, I guess, Red Ellison and Shane Vereen, I mean, that's, you can get by with that, but you don't want to have that be, a thing you get by with for 2 weeks as opposed to 8 weeks. And I think, honestly, given the Cowboys' question marks in the secondary and given how little of a pass rush they can really seem to sprout on a week-to-week basis, given the talent they have, I don't really think it would be the worst thing in the whole world if they went out with those guys against this Cowboys secondary and this Cowboys defensive line at this point of the season. I'd rather have Odell Beckham, you know, for November and December where, you know, he's going to be able to be a little fresher and take advantage of teams that maybe have lost a cornerback or two or a defensive end or two and aren't quite as stout in defense as they are right now.
Wait, is it just his ankle that's injured? Am I crazy? Is it just his ankle?
I
feel like it was his hamstring? I might be going crazy. It's possible I'm going insane.
It's been murkily and strangely reported. I think what's listed is an ankle injury, but it could be more than that. Certainly, you know, given the way he was hit and given the way he was moving around, it didn't look like he was 100% and had issues with his lower leg in general.
I think it is just his ankle. So forgive me for talking about his hamstring, but put another way, I mean, the same thing applies though. I mean, like if you injure your ankle, and I think that actually the worst thing about an ankle injury is that not just a receiver, but anyone with a bummed ankle, mm-hmm. you overcompensate in different areas when you're being physically active, and it can result in your body doing things your body's not used to doing. And the result of that is further injury to something else. So, I agree with you. Look, this is not a great Cowboys defense. They shouldn't be able to get pressure on Eli, even with Eric Flowers doing his best Matador impersonation on the left side of the line. And if you can give Odell Beckham an extra week plus of rest, then I think you do it, unless he feels confident that he's going to go out there. I would think, too, that his contract status, you know, he didn't want to get hurt. He didn't want to suffer a major, mm-hmm. you know, career-altering injury that will impact his contract status. I would assume that's in his mind as well.
Yeah, and even if he doesn't play, let's say he doesn't play, then you have Sterling Shepard in the slot versus Orlando Skandrick, who has missed most of the last two injuries, or not been 100% over the last 2 years with various injuries. Could be healthy now, but he's 30, he's undersized. Guys like that tend to lose it pretty quickly. You have Nolan Carroll, maybe, versus Brandon Marshall, which could be a mismatch. You have maybe, you could have Byron Jones, who's pretty good, versus Evan Engram. Maybe you get Evan Engram matched up versus Jeff Heath on a play or two. And there are certainly problems for the Cowboys in the secondary. So even without Odell Beckham, I could see the Giants moving the football around, because I just don't know that. The Giants' weakness is their offensive line. Their offensive line is bad, especially on the edges. I don't know that the Cowboys have the edge rushers to really go after Ereck Flowers and Bobby Hart.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I mean, look, you talk about, I mean, there's a reason why the Cowboys lost three games last year and two of them were to the Giants. The Giants are, the Cowboys don't match up well against the Giants' weaknesses on offense, and the Giants do match up well against the Cowboys' strength on offense. You know, they have that strong defensive line that can hold up against what the Cowboys do best. And so I would be surprised, Beckham or no Beckham, if this is not a very close game.
Interesting. So I'm trying to think, because I keep going back and forth on this. I'm picking the Cowboys, but I feel more confident saying it's going to be a high-scoring game, even without Odell Beckham, than I do in saying it will be the Cowboys winning comfortably.
I do not. I don't think. I just think it's not going to be a. I don't think. I cannot imagine a scenario where it's a comfortable win for either team. Although I definitely don't see I don't see the Giants in winning in a blowout. Like, I don't think that's on the table. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's in their DNA for some reason here. I've got the Cowboys winning, but I would take the Giants to cover
by four.
If they're getting a field goal or more, I would take the Giants. I think it's a field goal game at the end of the day.
Interesting. Well, I agree. I mean, I think it's more plausible the Cowboys win by a touchdown than it sounds like you do. But I could also see it being a close game as well. I do think the Cowboys are going to prevail. I just think they're a better football team and a healthier football team right now. And I mean, if Odell Beckham was healthy, that would change things. I still think the Cowboys would win, but I'd be a little more confident the Giants were going to be competitive.
If Beckham was healthy and Ezekiel Elliott was not playing, who would you pick?
That's a tough question. I would still take the Cowboys, but it'd be real close. That would be like, I would expect the Cowboys to maybe win. Like, I was at the line of Cowboys minus one. Like, it would basically just be the narrowest of edges for the Cowboys to me. And I could be totally wrong. I'm terrible at predicting games, but I do think that the Cowboys, like you said earlier, the Cowboys lose less when they don't have Ezekiel Elliott than the Giants lose without Odell Beckham, just because their offensive line is so good and such a huge part of what they are able to do, that I think that they can, they can really have an effective running game, even if it is Darren McFadden as their primary back.
So do you have the Cowboys, because if you have the Eagles winning the division, do you have the Cowboys making the playoffs?
I do. I have them as a wild card team.
Do
I have them as a wild card team? That's
a spot. I had the Cowboys, Vikings and Falcons and Buccaneers all with 9 wins as wild card candidates.
Interesting. So I have Panthers, Vikings and Cowboys all in that same, like, competing for a wild card spot with 9 wins. And I think I'm skeptical. I think I want to go Panthers, Vikings because it's more fun to see two teams who didn't make the playoffs last year get in. But I honestly can't pick between those three teams when it comes to my predictions.
It's a bunch of good teams.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be a fun wild card race, and it starts with this game.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, Will, thank you so much. Where can people check out more of what you're doing on the internet?
Let's see, at cbsports.com. Obviously, we'll have lots of content over the weekend. Sorting the Sunday Pile is my weekly wrap up column that I do, and we have the Pick 6 podcast. I assume I can plug my own.
Of course.
Yeah, it's me, Nick Costos, and Pete Prisco and Jason Lockenfora. It is typically off the rails and full of shouting, but it's actually a pretty fun podcast, so people should check that out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure I'll have you back on later on to talk about more NFL stuff, but thanks for coming on.
Always a blast, Bill. Thanks, man.
All right, guys, that's it. Week one of the NFL season is, well, I guess week one of our podcast is in the wraps, but more coming next week. We're going to have at least two shows a week talking about the NFL, plus the Nickel Package, where you can check me out every Wednesday. So plenty of audio content, probably too much, if I'm being honest, for you guys, but I'm going to keep doing it anyway. Love talking about the NFL, love having the opportunity. So more fun guests coming, more recaps coming on Monday, and then more previews coming later on in the week. More football to come from the Bill Barnwell Show. Thanks so much for listening.